Welcome to the March 6th edition of Guerrilla Radio. Once again, we're here in the Guerrilla Radio Media Center high atop the Student Union building here on the campuses of Dalhousie University. We've got with us a very special guest tonight, one Simon Helwig Larsen, our noted Latin American correspondent. Seldom in the studio with us, but a special treat, he's on the air tonight. Also, Doctor is in the house. He's going to be no doubt talking about Iraq. We were talking before the show about this ship now finally getting off underway. We got to talk a little bit about what's going on in the world of global politics. As per usual here on Guerrilla Radio, we'll keep you up to speed with what's going on in your local community. Plenty going on this week, including another anti-war action, which we will bring you up to speed on just shortly. Stick with us. Full show tonight. Thanks once again for tuning in to Guerrilla Radio, radio for the chronically seditious. All the mics are hot, and it's time for yet another edition of Guerrilla Radio. We all made it in here, finally. Simon was lagging behind. We were starting to wonder if he was going to make it. But here he is, and he assures us that there is news from both Colombia and Bolivia coming at you from our Latin American correspondent this evening. The doctor's eyebrows are going wild.
We're going to be talking about Iraq. As per usual here on Guerrilla Radio, we're going to bring it home. A couple of ships pushed off to join the Imperialist Brigade in the Arabian Sea, the HMCS Fredericton, a frigate, and the ill-fated HMCS Iroquois, and it's without its Sea King, which was, I guess, what was ill-fated, the Sea King. The Iroquois is off to protect oil shipping routes in the Middle East. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how the war in Iraq, like we always do, is not about to begin, but is ongoing and is about to be escalated. We have a story here about six more Iraqi civilians killed by American bombing raids in a war that supposedly hasn't begun yet. And we're going to talk about Israel. We've been focusing on Iraq, and I think that's important to acknowledge that we've been focusing on Iraq and ignoring what's been going on in Israel, both in the international media and here on Guerrilla Radio. We're going to remedy that and discuss what's been going on over the last 2 or 3 weeks in the West Bank and Gaza in the occupied territories. Suicide bombing yesterday made front page news after 3 weeks of Israeli incursions made barely news briefs in the newspaper. So we're going to shed some light on that. I'm excited to talk about Latin America, to move away from the Middle East. You'd think it was the only thing going on in the world, but Simon's going to let us know that it's not.
Taking it down south this week, we'll be talking about war, drugs, politics, and imperialism in Bolivia and Colombia, two of many examples that we could talk about in Latin America. Some very interesting developments lately. Bolivia, some street protests that rocked the government and ended in the first steps towards legalization of small coca crop growing in Bolivia. And in Colombia, a U.S. plane downed in the jungle and Bush decides to send troops beyond the limit set by Congress, pushing the envelope on intervention in Colombia just a little more, bit by bit. So we've got a couple of things to talk about there.
You know what? Just to break it up, ordinarily at the top of the show, we come at you with your This Day in History. Not going to happen this week. Our regular correspondent, one Ms. Ainsley Naylor, whom we all know and love. Johnny is particularly fond of This Day in History, I know. We're going to be skipping out on that tonight. Yeah, just not going to happen today. But what we do have, as a matter of fact, is a couple of... Yo.
And if we're listing the bad news because Ainsley's not here, unfortunately, if you were tuning in for the radio drama, you're going to have to wait till next week, but we'll give you a double edition next week.
Yeah, there's lots of good material coming out of that White House press room these days, and I'm sure you guys will have a special treat for us next week.
And our secret commandos in the field have let us know that the radio drama is it's a very popular segment of Guerrilla Radio, so unfortunately we won't be bringing it to you. We'll try and give you twice as much information instead.
Sounds good. I want to start off, though, by giving people information about what's going on locally, which is something that we try to do here. Sometimes we fall down on the job when we're getting around to the local info. So right up top, I think that maybe we'll put some of that out there. As per usual, we'll let you know that you can get in touch with us folks here at Guerrilla Radio by writing us email at GUERRILLARADIO. Guerrilla Radio, all one word, at ziplip.com. And that's the best way for you to get us your commentary, your questions, your comments. We love it when you love to hate us, and we love you even more when you love to love us. And if you are interested in getting an announcement on the show, well, so much the better. Send it to us by way of that account. I just want to put out a couple of quick announcements. Last week, we heard an interview with William Bloom in which he reminded us all that although protest isn't necessarily going to stay the hand of the United States of America in formation of their coalition of the willing, that it could, in fact, be the steps to something larger. So we've got to remind you that here in Metro, this weekend, Saturday, the 8th day of March, there's going to be yet another rally. It's also International Women's Day, which I think I should probably point out. I'd be... remiss if I didn't, but I should point out that there was a march, another march, 1 p.m. at Victoria Park, the corner of South Park and Spring Garden Road, starting at 1 p.m. rally and march at Victoria Park. And in preparation for that, I just got this today, and it's sort of on the down low, but it's going to be real fun if you're able to make it out. It says March 6th, that would be today. This is, after all, the March 6th edition of Guerrilla Radio, Printing for Peace, a screen printing workshop. There's going to be some free screen printing going on at NASCAD at the Lismer building that's next to Subway, room L220, and that's going to be between 5:30 and 7:30 today. So you can stay glued to your radio and still make it down there in plenty of time. Anyone with questions is encouraged to email. What's going on?
Well, word from the inside on the Printing for Peace is that the 7:30 deadline is far from a deadline. They'll actually be printing late into the night, so if you find yourself down around NASCAD at 8 or 9 o'clock, it's definitely worth stopping into. What was that room again, Rob?
That was L220, the Lismer building, next to Subway. And if you have any trouble finding it, we are assured that security is down with this and they can help you find your way. So that's a quick heads up. In preparation for the actions on Saturday, I'm told, I want to throw out a quick announcement and then a real quick tune. We know here in Halle last week there was a big fire down on Gottingen Street. And with that in mind, maybe I will cue up the theme music to this here announcement, which is just that, we had last week a big fire on Gottingen Street, and there are a series of fundraisers in the works to help out some of the folks who lost homes, businesses, etc. during that fire. So there is going to be a big fundraiser at the Marquee Club this Saturday night featuring the Hillwalkers and guests Universal Soul. That's March 15th, with all proceeds going to those who lost their homes, lost their businesses in that fire. And also there's been an account set up by the Kyber Center for the Arts, a bank account, and anyone who wants to make a donation to that bank account can do so by going to a branch of the Royal Bank of Canada and stating that they would like to donate to the North End Fire Relief Fund. If you've got questions, you can call 422-9668. That's it for announcements this week, I think.
No, one more, we got one more, one. Mr. McGregor, one
more. Let's hear it.
Students Taking Action in Chiapas is having a fundraiser tomorrow, Friday, at 8 o'clock at the Nova Scotia College of Art and Design. It's $3 admission, $2 for beer. The food is free. Rhyme for Reasons there with political hip hop. Barefoot's there. All proceeds, all money, forget proceeds, all money from the stack benefit goes directly to Chiapas to aid in the development work that is going on in Chiapas. Students Taking Action in Chiapas fundraiser Friday, 8 o'clock at NASCAD.
All right, I think that's it for the announcements now. We love you, Gottigen Street, and Larissa, and The Fall, and Hannah, and Brenna, and all you kids. We're thinking about you, and we hope things work out. We hope people get out to those fundraisers, and we're going to get back to the news real soon.
Okay, we're coming at you about the Middle East once again here on Guerrilla Radio, what we do best, bring you the news from the Middle East. Yesterday, as we saw in the news, a bus blast in Haifa, 16 people killed, the first suicide bomb in 2 months. And I have here a story from Haaretz Daily, which is the New York Times, if you could say that, the liberal mainstream newspaper from Jerusalem. And it's a bit of a background on what's been going on over the last 2 months since the last suicide bomb, as well as what's been going on over the last week or two in the occupied territories. There hasn't been a suicide attack, as we were told, since the 6th of January when Tel Aviv's old central bus station was attacked. In that time, since the 6th of January, no fewer than 156 Palestinians have been killed, including 27 children. Only 40 of those 156 Palestinians were armed. Israel has used the publicity, the public relations efforts that are going on around Iraq, the propaganda campaign, and the fact that the world's media's attention is focused on what is going on in Iraq, more specifically what's going on in New York and the United Nations and within the Security Council. And Israel has advantageously used this this distraction to escalate their repression of the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza. Incursions, Justin Hugler, a respected correspondent for the London Independent, wrote an article last week called While the World's Attention Focuses on Iraq, Bodies Pile Up in Gaza. It was a day-by-day, blow-by-blow tale of the week in which 45 Palestinians were killed in incursions, daily massacres going on. The BBC, before we came on the air here at Guerrilla Radio, announced that a tank shell was fired into a crowd in the West Bank. Again, typical daily massacres, daily murder by the Israeli defense forces. And I guess, as we know, over the course of this conflict that has been going on for this illegal occupation that's been going on for 35 years and the Intifada, which has been going on for more than two now, this follows a pattern that has been happening, and it is consistent. We hear about the suicide bombs. They are on the front page. They are accompanied with color pictures of the true carnage and the terror and destruction that has gone on, city buses being exploded, bodies strewn all over the road. But what we don't see is the three-week-long Israeli incursion into Gaza and into the West Bank, into the refugee camps there, bulldozing houses with people in them. We get little news briefs about what did happen. 2 days ago, Peter Mansbridge was nice enough to give us a 20-second soundbite on The National about how a 75-year-old man, a 13-year-old deaf boy, and a pregnant woman were bulldozed in their house in Gaza. But that's about the extent of what we hear. But as we know, and as we just said, 156, no fewer than 156 Palestinians have been killed since the last Palestinian suicide bomb, including 27 children, and only 40 of those Palestinians were armed. So what we're talking about is civilian death being matched by civilian death, and we have death tolls that are about consistent, 4-5 to 1, five Palestinians for every Israeli killed. In the spiral of violence shows no signs of ending. If anything, they show signs of escalation. Amira Haas, who just today won the United Nations UNESCO World Press Freedom Award, I would say the most courageous journalist on earth, based in Ramallah and has been there for the last 3 years working for Haaretz. She wrote an op-ed piece in the in Le Monde Diplomatique last week called Mass Expulsion, and it explained the Israeli government policy of and the hard right that is in power right now. The coalition that Ariel Sharon formed in Israel is a hard right coalition. Labor dropped out and was replaced by the hard right element, which there's no chance of a Palestinian state. This whole idea of a roadmap to a Palestinian state has no bearing on the government at all. And what Amira Haas was talking about, veteran correspondent, she was talking about how the pretext of war in Iraq would be used, support for Saddam Hussein, one, or two, Saddam launching missiles at Israel could precipitate mass expulsion of the Palestinians to a level of 1948's mass expulsion, where a million Palestinians were driven from their homes. Now, if you're a listener of Guerrilla Radio, this isn't anything new to you. We interviewed Norman Finkelstein, Zionist scholar of Zionism, excuse me, back in November, and he let us know that using the pretext of war for mass expulsion is something that has gone on in Israel for the last 50 years, and there's no reason to believe that it won't happen again. And so Amira Haas wrote a full letter. You can get it. It's Le Monde Diplomatique, the beauty of the internet. I highly suggest you check out this article, which is basically unfolding the case that they will use the war to force Palestinians across the River Jordan into what the hard right in Israel calls already a Palestinian state. And they say it. They say it on the National. We saw it 2 days ago on the National. There already is a Palestinian state, according to the hard right in Israel, and that is Jordan. 60% of Jordan's population is refugees from Palestine, and we need to be careful about which countries it is in the Middle East that are supporting this war on Iraq. Namely, the only one that has popular support for the war is Israel, and there's particular reasons why. Iraq was the most advanced nation in the Middle East before 1990, before the Gulf War, before the brutal genocidal sanctions regime that has taken place, and that just further bolsters the ruination of Iraq, just further bolsters Israel's unprecedented position of power in the Middle East. These are important things to be talking about while we spend most of our attention on Iraq, and for us here in North America, justifiably so, because it is directly our governments that are carrying out the massacre that's about to happen in Iraq, whereas in Israel, it's just with our complete political, military, financial, and diplomatic support, both reprehensible and need to be challenged. So that's what's going on the ground in Israel. Perhaps we would maybe take an opportunity to play some music to give your heads a little bit of a break before we fly back to this hemisphere and see what's going on with the Imperial Project in Latin America before we come back and talk more about Iraq here on Guerrilla Radio. This is Aesop Rock.
Shit. What else of the time is it? I'm late again. I gotta do it.
Zoom into the fumin of an aggravated breed via the study of post-adolescent agitated seeds. Half the patients waste themselves prior to commencement, so I focus on the urban oxygen samples, the half that made it breathe. This old Pompeii impression sways infection in 12 steps or less, and creating swiftly tiptoeing hard to swallow barter concepts. To give it, get it, never let itself pass for time stubbornness. Martyrs talk funny causes in a harvesting Spartacus and so on. I throw long Hail Mary bombs toward cookie cutter Mother Nature's bedazzled synthetic fabric. Life treats the peasants like they tried to fuck his woman while he slept inside. Well, they're merely chasing perfectionist emblems. When the clock
strikes nine. I'll be waking with the best of the routine caffeine team players, but a cycle of it. Under a dusted angel heart string. Big brother is watching my odometer like Buzzard the Fallen Elf, talking stealth. We got babies, rubber stamps, and briefcase parts. You want some door to door now? Order $10 or more. We'll shove it down your throat for free. I'll sacrifice my inborn tendencies for copper pennies for one commander. Give me that so we can retain baby back. Megabiter, snake, fathom. All across the freak, heckle, shiesty, brain, headroom, shake, planet. Make a move, pause, make a move, break cannon. Bend barrel 1-8-0, U-turn, squeeze, end it. It's on like it's never been. It's bleeding well, bigger than a bread box. It corrodes my leaky finance. I'll take my seat atop the Brooklyn Bridge with a Coke and a bag of chips to watch a thousand lemmings plummet just because the first one slipped. Sometimes I laugh at victory, kissing these little question marks. I tend to underestimate my average. Just another bastard savage. Someday you'll all eat out of my cold hand, cause every dog has its day, at which point I pull it away. Now, we the American working population hate the fact that 8 hours a day is wasted on chasing the dream of someone that isn't us. And we may not hate our jobs, but we hate jobs in general that don't have to do with fighting our own causes. We the American working population hate the 9-to-5 day in, day out, but we'd rather be supporting ourselves by being paid to perfect the pastime that we have harbored based solely on the fact that it makes us smile if it sounds dope. It's the year of the silkworm. Everything I built burned yesterday. Let's display the purpose that these stilts serve. Elevate the spreading of the silk germ. Trying to weave a web and all I believe in is dead. Brother, it's the year of the jackal. Saddle up on high horse. My torch force Polaris embarrassed. Jackal up the hassle by the doom and legend barrage. I bought some new sneakers. I just hope my legacy matches. It's the year of the land shark. Dry as sand parched. Damn, get these men some water. They're out there being slaughtered in meaningless wars so you don't have to bother and can sit and soak the idiot box trying to fuck their daughters. Man, it's the year of the orphan. Seated adjacent to the fireflies, circling the torches on your porches. Trying to guard the fortress of a king they've never seen or met. But all are trained to murder at the first sign of a threat. Maybe it's the year of the water bug. Cockroach, utter thug specimen. They respawn from dreaming of your next of kin. I'm still dealing with this mess I'm in. I've been the object of your ridicule. You've been a bitch, lieutenant. God, it's the year of the underpaid employee. Spitting 40 plus a week and trying to rape Earth in my off time. Dizzy, I can't keep myself busy enough so you can run, 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 and I'ma let you think you won. Everybody, we the American working population hate the fact that 8 hours a day is wasted on chasing the dream of someone that isn't us. And we may not hate our jobs, but we hate jobs in general that don't have to do with fighting our own causes. We the American working population hate the 9-to-5 day in, day out, but we'd rather be supporting ourselves by being paid to perfect the pastimes that we have harbored based solely on the fact that it makes us smile if it sounds dope. Mama let a bed and stumble to the kitchen.
So you thought you lived in a resource colony. We're going to take a little look now down below our borders to the south of the south. That's right, right down there below, what do you call it? Texas. That's right, our southern border. Anyway, we're going to go way, way down, way past Texas, take a little look at what Mr. Helwig Larson's got to share with you here on Guerrilla Radio.
We're going to take it way down, as Rob said, to Bolivia, where things have definitely been shaking these first couple of months of 2003. And like they said at the beginning of the show, I've been a bit of an absent Latin American correspondent, so I think I'm going to go a little in depth here and bring you up on what's happened over the last 6 weeks or so in Bolivia. Now, Bolivia traditionally has a really active social movement, civil society sector of people that are willing to take to the streets, blockade the capital, bring down buildings when the government tries to push things a little too far. We saw the first major example of this in 2000 when a multinational water corporation privatized the entire water flow of Bolivia, and especially the people of Cochabamba, which was a mountain indigenous town, brought the city to a halt, took on the military with stones and, well, their bare bodies, and ended up in the end reversing the decision at the national level, and water remains free in Bolivia. Now, things haven't exactly settled down there. The old multinational corporations and the International Monetary Fund and other of our favorite players have been pushing for more and more of Bolivia's pocket change to roll up north. And this year especially, a few packages being pushed through have shaken up the civil society sector again. At the beginning of the year, the new president, who's a pretty hardline neoliberal, introduced some measures that brought about this sort of street protest. Sorry, it's been a while since I've been on the radio. And in the the middle of January, peasants and indigenous people from across Bolivia took to the streets, blockaded the capital, locked down the city, and sort of brought the country to a halt in protest. And it wasn't until the government introduced a 12% tax hike that affected many levels of society beyond the peasant sector and the coca-growing farmers and people that are traditionally targeted by such measures. When they brought through this 12% tax hike on employment checks, a lot of the country took to the street, and the capital itself was the site of a lot of protests. The police ended up joining in with the protesters, and you had moving battles between police and the army staying loyal to the government. Long story short, the president ended up having to flee the palace, the presidential palace, in an ambulance. His entire cabinet quit. He offered to work for the next 4 years with no pay, and the protest continued. And what we have out of it now, as things are starting to settle down in the streets, the government's starting to come through and make some compromises that they're hoping will keep them in power, the most significant of which is that they've offered to begin making small-scale coca farming legal. Now, this is one of the biggest issues in Bolivia and indeed across the Andes and in South America, because culture for Bolivia has gotten to the point where domestic farming just isn't an option anymore. And as multinational corporations take over more and more small plots of land, and there just isn't much room for small farmers and domestic food production. But these people who traditionally do have land and grow small crops have had to turn to coca production, being the only crop left that they could make an income off of. But this is getting squeezed out with United States pumping billions of dollars into the area for programs to eradicate coca growing, aerial drug spraying that's actually killing all crops and a few people in its way. Anyways, the government in Bolivia has started to take steps to make small coca farming actually legal. Over the next 6 months, they're going to be allowing certain areas to grow small plots of coca and use this through a government registered internal market. Should be the first step towards a coca reform, which would actually bring about some change in Bolivia. The United States is up in arms about this. Of course, they're threatening to cut aid. Of course, they won't be cutting the military aid, which has tripled in the last few years, mostly for fighting coca production. But I'm sure they'll be cutting social aid to do with this. This is a topic to keep your eyes on. I'm sure Bolivia will keep on changing in the next months. I think we're going to move on over to the doctor again to hear a few words about Iraq, and then back towards the end of the show to hear some news about Colombia.
Over to the Western Hemisphere. Out of the Western Hemisphere. We're into Iraq once again. Thank you, our Latin American correspondent, Mr. Simon Helwig-Larsen, whose latest article on, detailed article on what has been going on in Colombia, which he's going to tell you about next, can be found at
www.latinamericapress.org.
We get around here at Guerrilla Radio. We don't like to keep it just to the radio. We find the internet a very useful tool for spreading around information. And we're high atop the Guerrilla Radio Media Tower here at the Student Union Building at the university on Dalhousie campus. But we also hit global with the internet. All right. Now, over to Iraq. We've been told that the war in Iraq has not begun yet. Here at Guerrilla Radio, we've been telling you otherwise for quite a while. To say nothing of the 12-year sanctions regime that has killed more than a million Iraqis, and which is enforced by American and Canadian warships, as well as British warships, in the Persian Gulf and Arabian Sea. There's also daily bombing raids that take place in the so-called no-fly zones, which is a policy that the Americans have adopted to patrol the skies and patrol Iraq with the minimum number of troops on the ground, which is a policy, as most of these policies, imperial policies in the Middle East, they go way back. Winston Churchill, when he was the Secretary of State of the War Office in 1919, spoke about how the Royal Air Force of Britain would be the most useful tool for keeping the recalcitrant Arabs down, as he said, quote-unquote. He also advocated the use of poison gas to keep those same recalcitrant rebelling Iraqis down. Winston Churchill let us know about 100 years ago that the most effective way to do that is to patrol no-fly zones. He didn't use the word no-fly zone, but he talked about how the British Royal Air Force should patrol the skies over Iraq. Therefore, you won't have to have as many troops on the ground if you control from the skies. That is what is called efficiency in the imperial project. Well, just last week, 6 Iraqi civilians died and 15 were wounded in an Allied bombing raid in the country's southern no-fly zone around the southern port city of Basra, where depleted uranium has made congenital birth defects the norm in that area because of depleted uranium that was used in the first Gulf War and is blowing about like pollen these days, infecting the water supply and making congenital birth defects the shocking and appalling reality of life in that southern port city of Basra. Well, March 3rd, American warplanes attacked targets, killing 6. Now, hundreds and hundreds of Iraqis have died over the past 5 years since the 1998 Desert Fox raid, which was Bill Clinton's attack for Saddam's non-compliance in 1998. And here we have 6 more. While we have the same newspaper, this is from The Guardian, but on the same day, the National Post and Globe and Mail here in Canada talked about the coming war. And then later on, if you get to the British press, you can read these stories about who dies in these raids. We don't hear about we hear on our mainstream media that there's daily bombing missions. We hear that all the time. It's not covert anymore. We hear about patrolling the no-fly zones. I'll go back to Peter Mansbridge again. We show maps on the National every night about the no-fly zones. But we never talk about just who these bombs land on. They seem to land on targets, but we're never sure what these targets are. Well, here's an example. It's 6 Iraqi civilians, 2 children that were killed in this. Can't even say the latest because the bombing missions take place every day. So this is news from this past Monday, which means there's been 3 days worth of bombing raids that have taken place since then. So worthwhile to note that the war has already begun, like we tell you every single week here on Guerrilla Radio. And to bring it home a bit, just because this might seem far off, it's American F-16s that are doing the bombing, but it is Canadian warships that are escorting the aircraft carriers that are the staging ground for these bombing raids. And just yesterday, from our port, left the HMCS Fredericton, which is a frigate, and the HMCS Iroquois, who left a week ago amid protest. Left a week ago and had to return because within 48 hours, the ill-fated Sea King came crashing down, damaging the Iroquois, sending it home to an embarrassment. The Canadians were embarrassed. McCallum said that they were embarrassed by the incident because Canada is leading a multinational brigade which is escorting American aircraft carriers. The reason that the HMCS Iroquois was sent and the reason that even though it was damaged, it was fixed and sent back is because the HMCS Iroquois is the largest destroyer in the Canadian fleet and is armed. I don't know if armed is the word. It's got the highest, most advanced anti-sub and anti-aircraft surveillance technology, which makes sense. It doesn't have destroyer capabilities in the conventional sense of being fit to launch cruise missiles or ballistic missiles in any way. It's essentially surveillance. So what it's doing is it's the pawn that floats ahead of the billion-dollar American aircraft carrier, ensuring that that no planes or no subs or monitoring the planes and subs, which is interesting because Foreign Affairs Minister Bill Graham and Defense Minister John McCallum are continually telling us that this mission is part of Operation Apollo, which is the Canadian code word for Operation Enduring Freedom, which was the American campaign. If we use the sanitized terminology, the campaign that went on in Afghanistan, Operation Enduring Freedom. However, as we know, searching for terrorists rarely involves anti-sub and anti-aircraft surveillance. And so there is something else going on here, and Defense Minister McCallum told us it's called double hatting. These ships are going to be going deeper into the Persian Gulf. The HMCS Iroquois is going to be going deeper into the Persian Gulf than any other Canadian mission ever in the Gulf, including the first Gulf War. And so just in case Guerrilla Radio stays in Iraq, stays in Israel, stays in the Middle East, and just tells us to act on it, we don't need to do that. We can bring it right down here to our shore, right down here to our shores. We're a naval, we're the most important naval port in Canada, and our ships are very much taking part in the expansion of the American Empire. We're going to fly back to the Western Hemisphere for what is going on in Colombia.
Well, without going on too much about background situation into the 40-year, absolutely brutal, devastating civil war in Colombia that sees about 1,600 people driven from their homes on a daily basis and about 20 people murdered for political motivations every single day, a conflict that's just spiraling out of control and definitely out of the scope of the mainstream media. The United States has been increasing its military participation in Colombia quite significantly over the last couple of years, and just these last 2 months of 2003, there have been a couple of developments that have definitely pointed towards a planned military intervention on behalf of the United States in Colombia. So let's talk a little bit about why the United States is interested in Colombia and why it would want to, in its divided fronts with many wars, devote more money and troops and equipment to Colombia. Among the many reasons, the most important, in my opinion, is oil. Colombia right now is the seventh largest oil producer and exporter to the United States. It's number seven on the state's list of countries it relies on for oil, and that is going up quite a bit. Actually, only 20% of Colombia's potential oil regions have even been explored. The United States works hand in hand through its oil companies, through its military aid, through many different ways with the Colombian government to clear areas from left-wing guerrillas, from peasants that are working on the land, clear these areas that are potential oil regions and make them safe, quote-unquote, for American corporations to go in and do some drilling. A lot of military aid to Colombia has been provided under the guise of the war on drugs, but recently this has changed quite a bit. In 2002, under the so-called war on terror, the legislation was changed to actually allow all military and police aid, past and present in Colombia and future, of course, to be used in a unified campaign, quote-unquote, against narcotics and insurgency, as in left-wing uprisings, which actually translates in Colombia to military aid to allow the government to fight against human rights workers, indigenous activists, labor workers, anybody pushing for peace. These type of people that raise their voices are killed on a daily basis in Colombia. So legislation has been changed to basically open the doors to allow U.S. military aid to be openly in support of counterinsurgent projects. And immediately after this was passed, the states pledged $98 million to create a critical infrastructure brigade to protect an oil pipeline owned largely by a California petroleum corporation by the name of Occidental Petroleums. In the beginning of January, the troops began to arrive. 70 U.S. Special Forces troops came into Colombia, where the oil begins to be pumped out of the pipeline to that area, to train troops to be a brigade that will patrol and protect this pipeline. Most recently, however, there were four Pentagon employees and one Colombian military personnel were flying in a plane that crashed in the jungle, most probably brought down by guerrillas, since they later approached the plane, killed the one American and the Colombian, and took the other three Americans hostage. Now this crisis, if we'll call it that, has set off alarm bells in Washington, but in my opinion, alarm bells that are actually opportunity bells. The Bush administration has jumped on this opportunity to send more troops to Colombia, and actually to push the number of troops in Colombia beyond the congressional limit that was set in 2001 of 400 troops at a time is the maximum number of U.S. troops allowed in Colombia. But Bush is allowed to surpass this for search and rescue missions, and he's doing his best to do that. The number of troops was originally set at 150, pushing it to about 411. Now it's an undisclosed number. They love that word, undisclosed. It's an undisclosed number, but one that will definitely bring the number beyond 400. I see this as just another step wherever they can take it to push the military involvement a little more, push the steps towards a full military intervention further and further each time in Colombia, jumping on every chance to be able to station more troops for wider roles in the conflict. This is going to be the first time that U.S. troops are engaging in something that isn't just training. They'll actually be participating in the search and rescue mission, which, even though the State Department claims that the American troops won't be actually fighting the rebels, they'll be involved in a mission that will be hunting down the rebels and rescuing U.S. hostages. And I wouldn't doubt if this leads to the first combat role of U.S. troops in Colombia. Stay tuned to Guerrilla Radio in coming weeks. This not-so-active Latin American correspondent will be taking a much larger role in coming weeks, and I'll be keeping you up to date as things unfold in Colombia.
There seems to be a trend, thanks to Simon Helwig-Larsen for that Latin America report. Although we did fly from hemisphere to hemisphere there somewhat seamlessly, or maybe not so seamlessly, I think it was seamless, because it seems that what we're talking about is oil. It seems what we're talking about is war for profit. It seems what we're talking about is war to create stability, quote-unquote political stability, namely pacification of indigenous populations that would like to use their resources for their own benefit, the crazy notion that the Americans will just have nothing to do with. And so it might seem like we went from Bolivia to Israel, from Israel to Colombia, from Colombia to Iraq. But I think what we had was essentially the same story going on there. We have empire building, we have expansion of empire, we have expansion of war for profit, and making the world friendly for that fraction of the population that benefits off of oil revenues like Occidental Petroleum in California. Rarely the people, the indigenous people whose resources could be used to actually provide real stability and not quote-unquote political stability. So I think that's it. Another episode of Tracking the Empire here on Guerrilla Radio. It's another Thursday. It's another dose of Tracking the Empire. Coming up next, we have Glenn Coolin with Irish Eddie and the Highland Gack. Going to kick your world music into relaxing after firing you up about the Empire. We'll see you on the streets March 8th, Saturday, Victoria Park, 1 o'clock. Another demonstration against imperialist war and war for profit. We'll see you there. Thanks for tuning in to Guerrilla Radio.